Lesson 25. Don't they feel ashamed of themselves? Text A. We were at the terminus, and as a bus had just left, there were only the two of us. We're sure to get good seats, I thought to myself confidently. But soon there was a crowd, and nobody seemed to have the least intention of forming a line. In fact, everybody was trying to crane forward, and soon they were almost standing in the middle of the road so as to be in the best strategic position. I realized I had been over-optimistic about getting seats, so I said to Granny, "You get on in your own good time, Granny. I'll get on first to find a seat for you." She was terrified at the idea. "Oh, no, you don't. Never mind about the seat. The important thing is to get on the bus. I'll never manage it by myself." Looking at all the young men around us, I realized Granny was right. All the young men had intent faces, just like soldiers ready to go into action. And when a bus did finally arrive, everybody rushed forward to meet it so as to be just in front of one of the doors, and people ran along with the bus, keeping as near to a door as possible, until finally the bus came to a halt and the doors opened. The mad scramble that followed defies description. It was almost a free-for-all. People fought, jostled, pushed, and elbowed their way forward, accompanied by shouts and curses all round. I had great difficulty in pushing Granny into the bus. I was really afraid that her old bones might crack. I had a lot of difficulties in getting on myself, too. People behind me pushed, people beside me elbowed, and people in front of me seemed to have formed a block of solid wall. Actually, there was plenty of room in the bus. After all, the seats had been taken. People who got on just stood near the doorway and refused to move in, blocking the way for all those behind who had not yet got on. After what seemed to me to be an eternity of pushing and shouting, all the passengers managed to get on, and the doors finally closed. I looked around, hoping somebody would have the decency to give up his seat to Granny. But they all seemed to be glued to their seats, those elegantly dressed young men and ladies, looking happy and smug, apparently proud of the fact that they were smart enough to be ahead of everybody else. After the bus started, Granny began to wobble on her feet, and I had to hold her tight to prevent her from falling. "Will someone be kind enough to give the old lady a seat?" The conductress called out several times, meeting no response. Some seemed to have suddenly dozed off, and others seemed to be captivated by something very interesting outside the bus window. In the end, it was a middle-aged lady who stood up and gave Granny her seat. After thanking the lady, I helped Granny sit down and looked at those elegant young people again, trying to detect some traces of shame on their faces. But I found none. Text B. Vietnam? Isn't that a shame? I saw a film on Vietnam. It showed the actual fighting. It looked ridiculous, just a bunch of kids. It was actually embarrassing to watch that. People were actually shooting and shouting. I saw Vietnam. I looked at a map once. I'm concerned with Vietnam if my brother has to go. Otherwise, no. My interest in life is me. It's a shame. I wish I could pick up a newspaper and read it. What I hear about things is heard from other people. I hope I'll make it. I think it's marriage to someone who is successful. Highland Park. A couple of kids. I'm not too crazy about children, though. You're sitting in a room, and all of a sudden five kids come in and they'll go to another girl in the room. Same with dogs. I'm worried about the next couple of years. Here, I'm putting all this time and feeling into this relationship with Stephen. And to have it not work out, it would be terrible. I don't know what I'd do. I'd probably find someone else and be just as happy. We have to have a war. There's been wars through all the ages. Apparently everyone gets enjoyment out of it. If we removed this part from man, it would be boring. Otherwise, things would be sort of dull. I love my building. I just love it. If I'm on a bus going to my mother's, I look at these people and get a nauseous feeling. On Michigan Avenue, I respect them more. Home gives me a sick feeling. It's a shame blacks don't like me, and children don't like me, and dogs don't run up to me. Additional information. Not long ago, a newspaper column caught my attention. It was the first time since I came to America that I read about an issue similar to the ones I often heard in China. It all started from a letter sent to a newspaper column by a woman named Sally from Toronto, Canada. She told the columnist about her unpleasant experience on a bus ride in Canada. She was in the late stage of her pregnancy with very swollen ankles. However, people on the bus just pretended not to notice her. The responses to Sally's letter, in the columnist's words, were staggering, and many of them were unpredictable. Almost all the women readers, of course, gave their understanding and sympathy to Sally. A woman who signed her name as L.M. related Sally's experience with her own. She told the columnist that she had used public transportation for 11 years in Detroit and never saw a man give his seat to a pregnant woman. She pointed out, however, women passengers did it all the time. As for her own experience, she once offered a seat to another pregnant woman when she herself was in her 7th month of pregnancy. When the other woman sat down and said to L.M., "Bless you for saving my life," the man sitting next to her turned red as a tomato. Some people think that nowadays in America, a lot of men were raised with no manners. A woman reader from California wrote about what she once saw on a bus and implied that parents should be strict with their children's behavior. She was sitting behind a mother and a teenage son. An elderly lady got on the bus and stood near the boy, struggling to stay upright. The boy was engrossed in his comic book when his mother poked him and ordered him to give his seat to that elderly woman. The Californian woman thought the mother was doing a fine job bringing up her son. Men readers, however, responded to Sally differently. Some of them have long resented women's equal rights campaigns and took this opportunity to get back at women. Here is what a man from Anchorage, Alaska, wrote. "This is for Sally in Toronto, who figures she is entitled to a seat on the bus because she is 7 months pregnant. Get real, lady. This is the 90s. You women have been screaming about equal rights, so now you've got them. Live with your equal rights and stop beefing." Another reader from Philadelphia claimed he learned his lesson from an experience on a bus. This is what he wrote in his letter published in November 1990. "The last time I offered a woman a seat on the bus was in 1972. She glared at me and said, 'Do I look helpless?' I replied, 'No, but I thought—'" She cut me off with, "You thought. The trouble with you chauvinists is that you don't think. Women today don't want a seat on a bus. They want equal pay." She then launched into a women's liberation lecture. I was never so glad to get off a bus in my life. There are also those who are unhappy with life and hate the world in which they are living. Therefore, they use Sally's letter as an opportunity to speak out their mind. A person from Oakland does not think Sally deserves any sympathy. His reason is that overpopulation is a major problem in the universe today, and there are other reasons that he dislikes this world. Therefore, he concludes that anyone who would bring a child into this crazy, mixed-up world is insane and deserves punishment. Lesson 26. There are two sides to everything. Text A. I had a most exasperating and frustrating experience with the hospital today. But Granny had it much worse. First, she was the victim of an accident, and then she was the suffering patient. She was out shopping early this morning, and was hardly a few scores of yards from our house when she was knocked down by a bicycle. The rider was a reckless young man who didn't even stop after the accident, but raced away as though an army was after him. It was a neighbor who recognized her and came to call me. Both of my parents were out. When I heard the news, my heart jumped up to my mouth. I raced downstairs, 2 or 3 steps at a time, and sprinted to the spot. I never ran so fast in my life. There I saw a crowd of people, I elbowed my way in and saw Granny sitting on the ground, leaning against a tree, her face all swollen and her mouth bleeding. She was holding her left arm with her right hand. It must be a fracture, judging from the way it hurt her. Some of the crowd were concerned and offering help and advice, but most were just curious onlookers. Someone managed to stop a passing car for us, and the driver kindly drove us to the nearest hospital. Then our ordeal began. Naturally, I took her to the emergency room first, and expected immediate attention. But we had to wait for at least 10 minutes before a doctor came over to us. He just took a brief look at her and said simply, "Go to the dental department." "But, doctor, aren't you going to give her a thorough check?" I asked. "Don't worry, her life is not in danger." Before I could say anything more, he was already out of sight. There was nothing for us to do but look for the dental department, which took us a long time because it was on the third floor. There, the dentist told us that we must register first, so I had to rush all the way down again to the ground floor, there only to find a long queue. I tried to jump the queue, explaining it was an emergency case. "Go to the emergency room if it's an emergency case." I didn't know whether to laugh or to cry. Anyway, I stood obediently at the end of the line, and at last, when my turn came, I was given many forms to fill, some of which were very detailed and quite unnecessary, I thought. After filling them, I found I had to queue up once again to hand them in. By the time everything was finished, I rushed upstairs. I was happy to find the dentist had the decency not to wait for me before treating Granny. That was the first comforting thing after entering the hospital, and I really felt grateful to the dentist. After putting several stitches to lips and gum, the dentist said, "That's all. Now, go and pay your bill." "But, doctor, her arm hurts." "You have to go to the surgical department for that. It's just opposite. I'll take you there." I really like the man. But all the same, I had to run all the way down to the ground floor to register again for the surgical department. And for all that much trouble, the doctor spent less than 5 minutes examining Granny and said, "She'll need an X-ray." He wrote out a chit, and that was that. The X-ray department was on the ground floor, and I had to help her all the way down. The complications and rigmarole involved in getting the X-ray done were too complicated and irritating to describe. The long and short of it was, after we got the X-ray picture, I had to take Granny all the way up again to the third floor. After taking a look at it, the doctor said, "No bones broken. I'll prescribe some painkiller and antibiotics." So, it was all the way down again. The complications in paying the bill and getting the medicine were too silly for words. I had to queue from window to window to get the medicine priced and added up, to pay the bill, to get the medicine. And if you didn't know the right order and sequence, which I didn't, it often meant standing in the wrong queue only to be told to come back again after queuing up at another window. By the time we got home, it was almost 1 o'clock. We had spent almost 4 hours at the hospital, and I made a calculation. 5 minutes with the doctor in the emergency room, 30 minutes with the dentist, 10 minutes with the surgeon, 3/4 hour all told. The rest of the time was spent waiting, queuing, rushing from place to place. If Granny had had to do all that by herself, she wouldn't have left the hospital alive, I'm sure. Text B. Dr. Ding Ping, a bone specialist in No. 2 People's Hospital of Anqing in Anhui Province, won a bronze medal at the 37th International Eureka Fair in Brussels last year for his invention, a new bone-setting device. Not only the doctor himself was happy and honoured, his hospital, indeed the whole city, felt honoured and happy too. But who would have thought that his invention not only brought the doctor a bronze medal, but also plunged him into a heavy debt? It all started in 1986, when for the whole year, Dr. Ding spent his every spare minute on his new invention. After another year's clinical trial use, the device proved to be effective. So, in June last year, Dr. Ding was informed by the Science Commission of Anhui Province that his invention had been selected to compete in the 37th Eureka International Fair. This was indeed happy news, but Dr. Ding's happiness was marred by the fact that he had to pay 5,000 yuan for entering his item for the fair. Where on earth was he to raise such a huge sum? He applied for aid from the Municipal Science Commission, but got turned down because, firstly, the commission thought his invention was a private one, the work of an individual, and therefore could not be funded by the public. And secondly, the commission was hard up anyway and could not afford to pay out such a large sum. So what was to be done? At the last moment, his hospital came to the rescue. They agreed to lend Dr. Ding 5,000 yuan, but starting from January this year, they would deduct 50 yuan from his monthly salary until the debt was fully repaid. Dr. Ding was grateful and jumped at the chance, but he was under no illusion about the predicament he was plunging himself into. His salary was only 97 yuan a month. His wife, a schoolteacher, only brought home 82 yuan a month. With two daughters at school, their life was not easy as it was. To have 50 yuan deducted monthly from their meagre income for the next 8 years would mean a financial burden that would surely break the camel's back. Discarding all face problems, Dr. Ding started to beg for alms from all quarters. Mostly he met with rebuffs, but he could not afford to give up. After a few months of begging from door to door, he managed to collect 1,400 yuan, quite a substantial sum, but he was still 3,600 yuan short. The news that his invention had won a bronze medal not only brought some spiritual comfort, but also some material gains. His hospital decided to award him 500 yuan as a token of recognition for his brilliant work, but the fact remains that he still had a debt to pay, now reduced to 3,100 yuan. Again, he applied for help from various municipal departments, but so far without success. Is Dr. Ding and his family going to spend the next 5 years in poverty and misery just because he has invented something useful and won an international recognition? Additional information. It's a hospital scene. People are lining up for registration. After seeing the doctor, they come back to line up again for their medicine. Of course, it's a very time-consuming process, because they have to get the prescriptions priced at one window and pay at another. Then, at the last window, they get their medicine. That means, altogether, they have to line up at three different windows just to get their medicine. To avoid all this trouble, a smart woman works out the most convenient way of getting her medicine. She herself stands at the end of the first line and pulls her pram with her baby in it, a toy duck and her own bag at the end of the other three lines. She has them all strung together with the wool yarn with which she's knitting. She believes this will save her the trouble of lining up three times.